Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Ecom Sales Tax Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Johnson, and with me is my co-host, Dan Peisner. Hi, Dan.
Hey there, Andy.
How's it going today? Looks like a sunny day. Looks like I see some shadows off the buildings in downtown Dallas.
Right, you are. Very sunny, nice weather for a change. Winter is disappearing fast.
Mm-hmm. Starting to see some leaves on the trees. So here in St. George, sunny St. George is a really cloudy St. George today. So you got the best of it today, Dan.
I'll take it.
All right. So today we're going to try an episode of Stump Dan. And Ryan's been getting a lot of questions from e-commerce businesses. And Ryan, why don't you come on and share your question and let's see what Dan has to say about it.
All right. So I've got a few questions for you, Dan. I get these all the time. And these are probably questions that people have, definitely have, but they may not even know they had. This could be great, great answers for people. The first one is, what do I need to do to close my business when it comes to my sales tax requirements? And here's an example. This is an exact example from the person asking the question. Is they had closed their business. It's been closed for a couple of years. But now the state is telling them they need to come back and they need to file their back tax returns. And she needs to know if she needs to or she can just ignore it.
Oh, boy. Usually the phrase ignore it is not to be used with the state if you're getting notices. The end result is seldom a fun one. There's a couple of different ways to tackle this, and the preferred one is going to vary by state. What I would usually do is reach out to the state, explain what happened, that the business ceased doing business in the state as of X date, and one of two things will happen. They'll tell you to fill out some form to effectuate that, and as soon as you send it in, then your account will be closed as of that date, and the back returns that they're looking for will disappear, assuming that they're all post the date of closure. The other thing that could happen is we're aware some states don't allow that, and instead what they would have you do is since you're not doing business there, you would file $0 returns for all of the missing returns to bring it up to current and then close the business out through whatever the state's process is.
So in this case, this business has been closed up for 24 months. The state finally catches up to them and says, you have to pay these back returns. So I'm coming at this from, let's say, a relatively small taxpayer that doesn't have a lot of extra money to just hire somebody like Dan Peisner, CMI, to go personally contact all of these states. So potentially then if she just, now this is just one state contacting her, I'm assuming, right, Ryan?
Right.
And she might be in, say, 10 states and get the same communication from all 10 states, in which case we're talking about quite the process. Is there, I know the chances of us recommending that someone ignore a notice from a state is very, very small. I get that. But is there, for a smaller seller, do they need you to contact the state, or are you suggesting that they could contact the state?
In this instance, they could probably contact the state and just explain that they're done doing business, they've made no sales since then, and then they'll give them instructions from there. You can name whatever trope you want to about state employees, but our experience is most of them want to help you to some degree. And especially with something like this, where the state's really not doing any money and it's just the formality of closing out the account, they're going to tell you how to do it. And they're going to try. And in a lot of cases, they'll have you on the phone while they navigate you to the exact site to pull the exact form down, and they'll walk you through it. I mean, they're really, in some states. Now there's always the outlier, especially if you get them in a busy time, but they generally, I think the seller can be comfortable doing it themselves.
Right. And as long as you really have not made any sales on what you've collected, the danger is you've made sales and you just didn't collect sales tax, or you collected it and put it in your pocket. So assuming those aren't, that has not happened, you really did make no sales for the last 2 years, then there's really there's nothing to be afraid of in contacting the state, right?
Right. Right. The worst that they'll do in a lot of these cases, if they won't close the account out and make you file the zero returns, there's a minimum non-filing penalty that sometimes they'll impose, but it tends to be de minimis. And if that's the case, I just push to have them close it as of the date of close.
So the first thing to do, if you want to avoid a bunch of extra work, is contact the state yourself. If it's something you just don't want to mess with, and you've got other concerns, you wanted to Dan to do it, or one of our team to do it, then you could contact us and we could help you with it. But it really is something that you can do on your own. You just got to be able to write down exactly what form they say to file, because what you're trying to do is avoid having to file 24 $0 returns. That is really needless paperwork, and you want to talk the state person out of that because they have the power typically to go in there and just close out your account. So in no way would you recommend being in any way hostile, right, Dan? Like, how dare you ask me this question?
No. You never want to be hostile to state employees. They do try to be nice and helpful, they do hold all the cards.
Yeah. So you might be offended that they would bother you because your business is done, etc. You just want to go away. But they're just, you know, they have, you know, computer screens in front of them. There's things that they could do. There's things they could tell you. And so you've really just got to play to their mercy, right?
Go to their process.
Exactly.
All right, Ryan, we answered that one.
Yeah, thoroughly, yes. Next question is, we got this from a webinar recently, and this person asked, how often should I collect exemption certificates? Monthly, every time someone purchases something? Annually, one time, over a lifetime? They're very confused.
All right, Dan, before you answer this, I just want to back up, give context for people who are thinking, what kind of question is this? This is a weird question. What is this? So the general rule is, if you have Nexus somewhere and you sell something taxable, then you must register and collect sales tax on those sales shipped to that place, all right? So you either have to collect the tax or a valid exemption certificate in lieu of that tax. So this obviously is coming from a seller who knows that fact and has collected certificates from their customers. And now they've run up against the question of, so do I have to collect them, you know, recollect them every year or what have you? So now I turn it back to you, Dan, with that context.
Well, Andy, in general, I try to use a rule of, if it doesn't state anywhere on the certificate that you've received, that you've gotten from your customer, I refresh it about once every 3 to 4 years. That's usually, some auditors really don't care, but there are some that want to see a newer certificate. And it's good. It's also good to know in some instances if they've lost that exemption. But in general, 3 to 4 years is a good time frame for most resale and exemption certificates. There are some special exemptions that you have to be they have to be renewed annually, and you have to get the latest annual certificate. It will usually say on their face when they expire. And then for those, obviously, as they expire, you'll want to either get new ones, and or if your customer can't provide them, then turn on the tax and start charging them.
So a place where exemption certificates come in is obviously if you are a manufacturer, distributor, you sell to other resellers, then certificates is a problem. Another place where it comes up a lot is for drop shipping scenarios. Because of Wayfair, manufacturers, distributors now have Nexus, as I was mentioned at the beginning. They have Nexus in lots of different places that they didn't have Nexus before. So now they're typically getting registered, and even though most of their sales are for resale, now they're having to collect certificates in so many different places that they didn't have to before. And so the impact to a drop shipping vendor, you know, let's say you're selling on Amazon and you use the drop shipping model, which means you advertise a product for sale and you write a great copy and someone buys that product from you. Well, you don't actually own it. Then you go and place your order very quickly at your vendor, your distributor, your manufacturer, and you have them ship it directly to your customer, drop ship it. Well, there's tricky issues there. And so let's answer another question. In general, how does a drop shipping exemption certificate process work? Help us think clearly about that process. From the point of view of someone selling on Amazon and wanting to use the drop ship methodology.
Think clearly about drop shipping. Yes. Will the next question involve nuclear fusion?
It's very possible.
That might be simple. Drop shipping, to try to do it as simply as possible, involves three parties: a manufacturer, a reseller, and a customer. And the customer goes to the reseller and wants to buy a box of widgets. The reseller doesn't have any widgets in his inventory, so he's going to go to the manufacturer, order up the box of widgets, and he's going to have it, instead of having the box go all the way to the reseller and then get back on a truck and go to the customer, he's going to have the manufacturer deliver it directly to the customer. So there's no reason for the goods to go to the reseller. The customer is going to pay the reseller, and the reseller pays the manufacturer. Circuit's complete. The problem arises in this when the manufacturer has Nexus in the state of the customer, but not the reseller. So the manufacturer will go to the reseller and say, "Hey, I need your resale certificate, or I have to charge you tax." The reseller is going to say, "But I'm reselling the goods. I'm clearly reselling it. That should be exempt, but I don't have Nexus. I'm not registered in this state." And in that case, you get into a quandary. The solution to that is, unfortunately, where the nuclear fusion comes in. Unfortunately, every state has are kind of a hodgepodge of solutions. Some states will let you use their certificate. The state of the customer, they'll let you use their certificate, but put your home state number on it for resale. Some states will let you use, if it's a streamlined sales tax state, you can use the SST certificate, and they have to accept the home state number on that for drop shipping. There's a couple of states that let you, I know there's one state out there that lets you use your home state certificate. However, there are a number of states, including the big one being California, that say we will only accept our state certificate, and in order to use it, you have to be registered. So in that case, if the reseller was not registered with the state of California, the manufacturer would be required to charge them tax.
So let's California is one of the onerous states, right? So let's just cover a typical scenario. So let's say I am an Amazon seller. I use the drop ship model. I'm in New York, and I get an order from a customer with an address in California. I am not registered in California. And then I go place my order with a distributor in Texas. And I say, "Hey, Texas distributor, manufacturer, ship this product to my customer in San Jose, California." So I don't have Nexus in California, so I don't have to charge sales tax in California. The manufacturer distributor in Texas somehow says, though, "No, you need to pay me California sales tax on this shipment to your customer in California." Why would the Texas distributor slash manufacturer demand of me to pay California sales tax when I've never even been to California?
Well, because the, in this case, the manufacturer distributor would be registered with the state of California. And whenever you're registered in a state, any shipment to that state or any sale into that state, you have to either collect the sales tax or a valid resale or exemption certificate. And so under the laws of California, Mr. Texas manufacturer distributor, because he's shipping to San Jose, would be required to collect the appropriate San Jose tax from, in this case, the manufacturer's invoice goes right to your New York reseller. So he'd be collecting the tax from the reseller.
So the New York reseller is in quite the, I'm now in a dilemma because the California sales tax that he's charging me, you know, 9% or something, is actually more than I was marking up my product. You know, he bought a t-shirt that I'm selling for, well, who doesn't, I won't get into that example. But the sale, but as soon as this distributor charges me sales tax, I'm suddenly losing money. So I really cannot afford to pay sales tax. What can I say to my vendor in Texas to make him not charge me sales tax in California?
Well, the only option that I'm aware of is to turn around and say and fill out one of those handy registration forms for California, and so that you can get a resale certificate and issue it to the Texas distributor. California and the states like it, that's just about the only option they give you.
Yeah. So that's a dilemma that you run into. And I know that there's lots of drop shipping questions that come up. And, you know, if you have a specific one, that would be a fun way to stump Dan. We have lots of really good resources to answer your very specific question. Because when you kind of nest in there multiple vendors, sometimes you ship it to California for an intermediate step, but it's not the final sale. It can really mess things up. You'd like to know what are the 10 states that make you use their state certificate. We can talk about that. So lots of really great information. But Ryan, I think that's good. I think I can start to see smoke coming out of Dan's ears. Not really. This stuff is easy for Dan. This is not taxing him at all. So Dan, thanks again for being with us. We'll put these questions up on our podcast. And if you have other specific questions that you would like us to address, and particularly if you want to be famous and you want us to mention your name, Ryan can do that, right? Usually we
send them to me
confidential, but if you want this to be your moment in the sun, we can certainly mention your name and make you semi-famous. All right. Dan, thanks again. And we'll see you next week.
My pleasure as always.